Monster Movie Media presents.
Welcome to episode 67 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up on this episode, I have a conversation with filmmaker Ben Lancaster about his upcoming film, The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head. So without any further ado,
let's begin.
Alrighty, I'm here with writer-director Ben Lancaster. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Super. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
And you're on the show to talk about a film that you're currently working on titled The Further Adventures of Walt's Frozen Head.
That is correct.
That's a lengthy title there.
Well, it is a lengthy title. It's slightly shorter than Dr. Strangelove or How I Stopped Worrying and Learn to Love the Bomb, but, you know, it's up there.
right. Slightly. So let's just jump right into this. Mm-hmm. What is your film about?
Well, the film is about the urban legend that Walt Disney's frozen head exists somewhere down in the Utilidors. Mm. And the conceit of the film is that every year, the executives of the Disney Corporation go down and have their sort of annual catch-up meeting with Walt, where they de-thaw him and he gives them direction on the company for the year. The trouble arises when they, for the 50th time or so, decide that he is not allowed to go up and see the park that he inspired, that obviously opened in 71, several years after his passing.
Right.
And so a low-level theme park employee wanders down to the Utilidors one evening after getting lost and stumbles across the room where they're keeping Walt's head. And Walt convinces the employee to go up and to kidnap him, essentially, and take him to show him the park for a day.
Hmm. Interesting. So what was your inspiration for this?
It started initially as a joke, because what are we going to make a movie about? I'm a filmmaker and hang out with other filmmakers, and we obviously throw around gags and topics and things like that. And it originally started that way. And then as I started, thinking about it and mulling it over and kind of, talking it through with some of the other people who wound up being on a part of the team, we realized that there was actually something here because, I don't know, to me, the idea that someone would want to preserve themselves as the urban legend kind of states is a very powerful character motivation idea. So you have somebody who's holding on to something, and that sort of character motivation is always, in my mind, is what makes a really interesting film. So besides the initial gimmick of the fact that we're playing off this urban legend, we also had initial kind of theme and concept that went into it.
Okay, so you felt after the joke, I guess, of like, yeah, we should do that, you felt there was real motivation that to explore why it would take place.
Right. And, at that point, we decided essentially who this other character was going to be. And, the low-level employee who's taking him out to the park. And, we wound up hitting on the idea that this is a man whose daughter is turning 16. and he's worried about losing her, and he's worried about her growing up, so that his journey of learning to let her go is going to parallel what happens with Walt finally seeing his park for the first time.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of questions come up.
Right. No, I understand.
Very interesting concept. So let's talk about how you're gonna make this movie. Now, it's currently in production.
Yes, it's currently in production.
You've shot some of it, right?
Yes, before we went public, we shot about what's probably going to be about 20 minutes of the finished film, which actually takes place in the Magic Kingdom and sort of the surrounding areas. So that was done on minimal cameras with minimal crew and obviously without the permission of the Walt Disney Corporation, who probably are not particularly thrilled at the idea of their founder being portrayed this way.
Probably not. We'll get into that a little bit later.
right.
But about your filming, so you shot this in Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like in a post Escape from Tomorrow world where there had to be probably a little more on heightened alert of people shooting a narrative film in their parks?
Right. It's an interesting experience. It's not something I had ever done before. And quite honestly, it kind of goes against my nature because I'm by nature like a rule follower and okay. A little bit nervous and that probably showed for the rest of the people. But, it went very straightforward. We were surprised at how easy it actually was to get the footage that we needed and the reverse angles. And, we were hanging out in areas that were pretty heavily trafficked.
Mm-hmm.
We're pretty heavily trafficked by cast members. And we didn't have anyone stop us. Actually, there was only one shot that we had somebody stop us on, and that was going through the bag check. And that was our very first shot that we got in, and somebody came over at the bag check and decided that we needed to stop filming right there. But then after that, it was smooth sailing.
Oh, so they didn't want to document the security right. procedures.
Yes, so, which makes sense. There's an obvious safety concern there.
So this is a shot of you sneaking Walt's head into the park. Is that what's going on in the film?
That's essentially the idea. So, in the film, the characters put Walt in a bag. If you've seen the screenshots that we've released, you've seen what the bag looks like. It's sort of a red container. And so Walt's actually in a jar for the entire film. So that jar goes, presumably slides in the bag, and then they're talking about how they're getting that through the bag check.
Okay. But other than that, you had no issues doing the same things over and over again?
No, we really didn't. We rode the people mover over and over again. We were hanging out by the Tangled restrooms quite often and Center Street in that area. We were really surprised at how there were no red flags, because those areas are all fairly heavily trafficked by cast members as well, mm-hmm. especially the Center Street area, which we had known from really scoping out the areas. But we were really surprised at how we were able to fly under the radar with that.
Wow. So how many days did you shoot?
In the park and the surrounding areas, I think we were at 4 total. And if some of that was at the TTC and some of that was at the in the park itself, and then a little bit in the parking lot.
All right. So it's a little under the radar as opposed to how much they shot for Escape from Tomorrow. Just as a
right. Yeah. No, it's not the majority of the film. But I think it's sort of that key aspect of the film, of them actually making it into the park, obviously, because that's what they're shooting for.
Right. Of course, that's the act three, I assume.
Right.
How did you get into Disney fandom and what role does that play in this film?
I want everybody to be very aware this is a film made by Disney fans. It really is that sort of loving tribute. While at the same time, being as Disney fans can be a slightly, critical of the company and maybe the future creative legacy after Walt's passing. But, this was something I had just always grown up with, the sort of Disney fandom. Coming from Missouri, you hear a lot about the hometown hero of Walt, even though he wasn't born there. you know, I'm from the Midwest. You sort of have this strong connection with the company. And then at the same time, you know, one of those kids who made their pilgrimage a couple times in my childhood to Disney World.
And so you currently live in Florida?
Yes. Yes. I'm in the Orlando area.
Yeah. Cause you just mentioned that you were a filmmaker, but you didn't necessarily mention that you were deep in the Disney fandom. So I just want to kind of put that out there.
Right. Right.
This is coming from a place of a Disney fan.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I run the Twitter account Walt's Frozen Head, which I started well back in August, I think. And part of that was to not necessarily infiltrate, but to sort of prove when it came time to the idea that this film was coming out, that this was coming from a place of fandom, you know, in starting to interact with Disney Twitter to show that there's a depth of knowledge here, that this isn't somebody who thought it was a funny idea and has no idea what they're talking about.
I would say that's pretty effective because, you know, I'd been following your Twitter account for a while. Mm-hmm. I guess you followed me and I followed you back, and I didn't know you. I just knew the account, and then you contacted me recently, letting me know about the film. And then I asked you, I'm like, you're the same person that's running that account, and I knew right away that based on what you tweet about. I mean, the perspective of the Twitter account is basically as if Walt Disney were alive today and his commentary on the theme parks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not really about him being a frozen head.
Right.
So it takes somebody that's really like in the know to write that kind of commentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's even times where, you know, there's even no jokes. Like it's just literally just a nice thing that you tweeted. So I knew that it wasn't because also the fact that you've been keeping up with it meant that it was really something to it. Because most people that would do something like that, you know, they would probably do it, you know, for like a week or two, and then it would just it would just die off because they would run out of material or something like that.
I mean, the wonderful thing about Disney fandom is the world is so big, you know, so there's TV show fandom, there's this, that, but you know, Disney fandom is so massive. There's always a joke about, you know, Black Cauldron that you can pull out, you know, there's always a joke about Darby O'Gill and the Little People that's, you know, waiting to be made.
Two of my favorite films right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you've just got the storied and the goal is that, you know, not most, but you know, 20% of the jokes are probably going to go over 50% of the people's heads. You know, you do those very specific jokes for the hardcore fans. And that's sort of the attitude we took in the movie too. There's jokes that are really just in there for the hardcore Disney fan. No one else is going to get them. And you know, we're building a movie for the fans essentially that other people can enjoy too as well.
Right. There's still something there, but
Yeah, there's still something there. It's not just for them, but essentially, you know, we want Disney fans to know that this is a film for them.
There's deeper layers, like, is basically what you're saying.
Right.
So you put up a video that I assume is going to be in the film that seems like it's like an old 60s Disney-style film.
Right.
I mean, maybe you could explain it better than what I just said. but is it, I guess it's kind of, it's similar to... It's actually in style, very similar to a lot of the older Disney television specials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's supposed to be as if there was this pilot episode made of what is essentially some version of the Disneyland television show, but it's about science and technology, and essentially this is the lost episode that's about cryogenics that never aired because the company wasn't exactly too happy about the subject matter. And the idea was to, you know, demonstrate that there was a, you know, an interest in cryogenics back in that time and that sort of idea. You know, and it is to kind of show that, like, you've seen the Disneyland TV shows if you're, you know, this level of hardcore fan.
Right.
We've seen those too, and we're presenting you with something that it seems familiar to you.
Okay, cool. I don't know if you have come across this, but just in like the past day or two, there was a similar type video put out by the Tomorrowland, upcoming film.
Yes, I just saw that last night, and I watched through it, and I realized that one of the shots that is in ours, which was pulled completely from public domain material, one of the shots that's in ours is actually in their film as well. So they pulled the same public domain footage of the 1964 World's Fair and dropped it into their their film as well. So if you watch them side by side, you can see that one shot. Now ours is in black and white and they colorized theirs, but
right.
But it's the same little cityscape there.
You know, not to get too deep into Tomorrowland, but when I first saw that, I thought that was pretty, you know, that was definitely tugging on fans, you know, heartstrings or whatever, because there's so much in reality that actually happened. And then actually using the footage of Walt Disney, I bet, you know, and I actually saw that video before I saw yours. So,
right.
But obviously you made yours way before this came out. This came out just a few days ago at the time of recording. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting seeing both those things back to back and seeing like this real mixture of fantasy and reality in a film being released by Disney and also in your film.
I mean, we kind of got blindsided by Tomorrowland, obviously, because, you know, on one hand, the Disney fan of me wants this to be this amazing story about Walt's legacy. And on the other hand, I'm like, but that's the movie I'm making. You know, so there is those sort of mixed feelings. But I'll tell you, I will be first in line on May 22nd, too, to go see that that film. Though, actually, I think we're shooting that day, so I'll probably, you know, have to wait until we're done with that.
But. All right. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, we're not going to talk about Tomorrowland, but I mean, there's been very little information about what is actually in there. It's insinuating that they created the experimental prototype city of tomorrow, and you could only access it through some secret pin. That's if that actually is the plot of the movie, I think that's like Disney nerds, you know, fantasy. Their heads are going to explode. I'm not going to put my hopes up that that's actually what it is, but you never know.
Well, you know, so. I'm imagining the person living in May 23rd of listening to this podcast, you know, who has all the knowledge and has seen the film and is looking back on this with, you know, shaking their head saying, if they only knew.
Right. You people in the future that know you're privileged.
Exactly.
All right. Anyways, moving on from that. So were you concerned that the premise would be offensive to Disney fans?
I mean, yes, that is a concern going forward. I hope it's not, but I do understand that people get touchy about portraying a real person doing something that is a little, I guess, off brand.
Right.
My fears were sort of allayed when I started in to do, you know, kind of some additional research on the film and opened Neil Gabler's biography, which literally starts with the phrase, you know, he was frozen, and then obviously goes on to discredit it. Right. But, you know, this is something that's out there. This is something that's in the pop culture. And I think, you know, it's odd because it does seem to sort of fit the narrative of Walt in some ways. You know, this person who had a lot of trouble giving up control over things. You can kind of imagine that could happen. But you're right. And, you know, there has been some pushback on Twitter of just people who aren't interested, and that's fine.
Right.
I don't need everybody to like this movie. You know, I hope some people do like this movie, and those are the people who I'm making it for.
Right. Okay. What exactly is the tone of the film going to be?
You know, it doesn't necessarily focus on the macabre or the dark kind of realities of, I guess, what you would have to do to keep a head alive. It's very light and quirky, and I think people are going to be surprised with how much heart it has in it.
Okay.
You know, really, I tried to pull a lot of influences from, like, the mid-century 1960s Disney comedies. You know, so it's going to feel a little like Parent Trap. It's going to feel a little like Darby O'Gill and the Little People, though. Wow. I think that one was in the 50s.
But still, yeah, no, that's really, I didn't get that at all for this. So that's, it kind of, yeah, I don't, yeah, I don't know if I thought it was going to be dark, but it kind of seemed like it was going to be kind of serious, you know, and I'm not sure if that's why I asked the tone of what you're going for.
No, it's definitely going to be a comedy. And, you know, I think our Kickstarter video might have been a little off topic. You know, we were kicking around ideas, and at the end of the day, at some point, you just have to make the Kickstarter video.
Right. Get it up there, yeah.
And, yeah, get it up there, because we're worried. We're focusing so much energy on making the movie, and, you know, some things just wind up slipping through the cracks, like the fact that we need to raise money.
Right, well.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be a comedy, and I think once we get a real trailer out there, I think people are really going to see that.
Okay, yeah, of course. I mean, a real trailer has not been produced yet because you're still shooting.
Right, right.
What have people's been reactions been to the Kickstarter video and just your Twitter account and you know, everything you've been doing?
Well, you know, this is, it's a little interesting because we were planning the sort of big reveal of the fact that the movie was coming out. And I had written a blog post for Touring Plans where I identified myself as the writer director of Walt's Frozen Head.
Oh, okay.
And it got posted on April 1st, a few days before we were.
April 1st.
I thought it was going to be later in the week and I wasn't, you know, I probably should have asked. And so, that reveal kind of, you know, happened and we sort of had a slow trickle out where people realized this is a real thing that's right. going to exist in the world. This isn't, you know, this joke for April Fool's Day. So, you know, it's interesting, but I think overwhelmingly it's been positive. We've had a lot of people who are really interested. And a lot of people who donated to that Kickstarter campaign who really seem to be, pretty passionate about, the film. So.
Well, that's good. What was that? Yeah. What was that blog post about? Just out of curiosity.
It was about Stitch's Great Escape.
So, I assume it was a negative spin.
Yes, it was. Derek from Touring Plans does this like weekly, you know, six posts.
Top
and
six,
he had
yeah.
invited, yeah, top six.
Yeah, Derek's been on the show several times, so our listeners.
Right, right. Yes, he had invited me and several others to write like individual posts about what they had ranked the worst attractions.
Oh, and you contributed to that as the writer director.
Yes.
Okay, right. So that was really buried in there. In the
no, yeah, it was well below the fold. I mean,
but and then it came out April 1st. That's funny. So what's your thoughts on? Or fears, I'm not sure exactly how to phrase this, on, you know, Disney's response to this film as a corporation.
We have no idea what them as a corporation are going to do. They have a excellent legal team that could, you know, shut us down. But, at the end of the day, you know, they sort of can't control what gets out there. You know, and if we have to release this movie by just throwing it up online for free, that's what we're going to do. You know, we would prefer to go through more traditional distribution route where we put it on Amazon Prime or some of those sites where people can stream the film. But if they decide that that's, you know, they're going to sort of go after us and stop a more traditional distribution, we'll find a way to get it out there.
Okay, so they're not really going to stop it, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know how they could. Maybe they can find a way that I'm not thinking of right now. But ultimately, you know, I've had people who read the script who had no interest in necessarily the Disney company who told me, like, after just reading the script, they want to go to Disney World now. They want to see what this place, you know, is. Mm. You know, because I don't think it's a negative portrayal of either Walt or the Disney Corporation as a whole. They're not the villains in the film. They just are who they are, and they're you know, there's a few jabs at sort of the modern Disney company tendencies, but it's nothing malicious. I mean, it's a very happy movie at the end of the day. I honestly think it would be better promotion for them. So you know, if they want to get rid of the free advertising, go ahead. But you know,
well, typically Disney is very Disney company of today has been very good about that sort of thing. You know, there's tons of videos of people singing Disney songs on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget the hundreds of podcasts that are filled with copyright infringements. This one not included.
Oh, of course.
But, what, you know, but that, you know, that play copyrighted music, Disney copyrighted music. And they seem to really embrace the fan community.
I just wanted to point out that, you know, legally, we're probably in the clear. I mean, if it came down and there was a Supreme Court decision or whatever, we're probably well within our First Amendment rights to do everything that we've done in the movie. You know, we've consulted with some legal teams. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can stop it just by, you know, sending a nice little letter that gets out there, you know, whether the law's on your side or not. But I do think that, you know, this is an expression of the fan community, I think. So – I hope they just decide to take a more laissez-faire approach to it. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I would think that their concern is not so much what it's in the movie, but more of that they don't want it to be confused that it's their movie.
Right, right. No, that's understandable too. And we're going to make every distinction, you know, in our advertising, in our posters, in our you know, all of the above, to make sure people recognize this is not a Disney film. This is a a fictional work of fiction based on a historical figure.
Yeah, I think if you ride that angle, it should be okay. Again, you're going to get comparisons to it, unfortunately. But just thinking back about Escape from Tomorrow, I mean, that is obviously a portrays Disney in a negative light, no matter what you thought of the movie.
It is a very dark film. It is a very this is not that movie. This is very different than that.
And I know they tried to stop it in some way, but they were not able to. So I just find it very interesting. And it said that the post Escape from Tomorrow language, there is something, and I don't remember the exact details of it. We've had filmmaker Philip Swift on the show a few times, who is currently doing the Dark Side of Disney documentary.
Right.
And I asked him pretty similar questions because he was going to be filming a lot of stuff in the park. Mm-hmm. But apparently, you know, it's really hard to make a distinction between somebody's home videos and it's somebody shooting a film in the parks.
And with the quality of cameras going up too, you know, it's really difficult to figure out what's a professional camera, what's an amateur camera, and, you know. Right. We shot on a camera that was really very tiny, but gave us just this incredible image that I think the film's going to look fantastic.
What was the camera, if you don't mind me asking?
It was the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Cam. Hmm. So it's a little larger than an iPhone. Now it takes a full lens on top of it, but it gives us this really very stunning image. We're going to look better than Escape from Tomorrow, just because of the progression in technology that's occurred from there. But you know, it's going to be interesting, and we'll be releasing little bits of the footage as we sort of get them together. And I think people are going to be really impressed with, how much we actually look like a real movie, despite the fact that we were looking over our shoulders to make sure that security guard from Small World wasn't keeping his eyes on us for too long. So,
how did you direct?
It was a lot of we did a lot of rehearsal beforehand. We went and scouted out the areas, so we knew the physical geography beforehand, and we knew our character motivations. We knew people were acting, and I was using actors in the park specifically that had a theater background, and so they could kind of turn it on and off a little bit easier than a lot of film actors can.
Okay.
So we basically went in and did it. You know, we had a few people keeping, eyes out for employees who were noticing us. But beyond that, we just kind of did it. I don't really know what else to say beyond.
I mean, so
that.
You would literally say, let's do it again, or let's try it this way. And you would say, you would verbally say all of these things and no one would pay any mind.
No, we really did. We really did. A lot of that was really helped by the rehearsal. We really ran the scenes we really ran the scenes beforehand. We knew going in sort of what the characterizations were going to be. So there weren't the kind of surprises that you normally have on set where actors are making different choices. No, we kind of had narrowed that down, so we sort of knew what was going on. And we were very active in getting the actors involved in, which is something you don't normally do because you want them sort of more focused on their performance and a little outside their head, but we got them involved with these are how we're sort of setting up the shots. So they knew, okay, we only need this little section, give us this little section right here. Okay. We got that. Now we can move on.
Did you buy tickets for everyone? Does everyone have annual passes? Like how did all that work?
No, it was all tickets. So we purchased tickets for everybody, multiple day passes so that we could get in multiple times. And, that was a pretty big expense for the movie, but
so you need a Kickstarter for that.
Yeah, that one's a little bit harder to justify, but
Kickstarter
once we got all that.
I need a Kickstarter for park tickets myself. Man, I can't keep up with all this.
Yeah. No, I, you know, we in one scene we have the characters holding Mickey bars, and unfortunately, like, we kept having to do this one scene over and over and over. I can't tell you how many Mickey bars we purchased just because they kept melting.
I was going to say, what do you have, about a good 3 minutes on
that? It's not long. It's not long, especially once you have one bite out of it. Then it's just, you know, flowing out of that hole, and it's, yeah, so. What I'm saying is they already got our money, so, okay. You know, whatever they... Whatever they do now, they've already got our money.
Right, right. And Mickey bars and park tickets.
Exactly.
So it's still in production. What do you think? What's the timeline for completion and when possible film release?
You know, it's as with a lot of indie films, we've got more time than money. So we're going to use the time instead of the money. You know, realistically, we're looking at hopefully getting our first rough cut done in sometime in August. And at that point, we'll start reaching out to people to see who might be interested in playing Walt. We would love to get somebody with maybe a little bit more recognition than our other actors, even though they are phenomenal. They're kind of local Orlando talent. Mm-hmm. You know, the Walt is actually currently being played by just a large metal box with a green panel in front of it, but that green panel will go away.
Yeah.
Yes, that green panel will go away and be replaced by an actual human face. You know, that's a fairly lengthy effect to integrate into the entire film. And he shows up in, you know, a good chunk of the movie, as you might imagine, being the main character.
Right.
Realistically, we're setting the target of ourselves of really getting the film out in early 2017, hopefully having our backer screening sometime in December 2016, but that we're holding that a little bit tenuously at this point. So we'll know as far as what our progression is moving forward with that.
All right, so we're really early on in the process then.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize how long a lot of the editing and the color correction and the sound design and all of that really does take. You know, the actual production is relatively short. You know, we're shooting for 15 days on our back end and about 4 days before that. So that's a relatively short period of time. But the post-production, you know, just it stretches out. It just takes a while to get it right and get it to the point where we're happy and proud of it.
Right, right. No, I definitely understand. I'm a video editor, a full-time editor, so, so I definitely understand that.
Right.
But, yeah, you know. Most people don't know. I mean, things actually, you know, these days things can happen faster than in the past. So most people don't know what goes into it. So,
right.
Especially,
right.
You know, when I type budget, it is time more than money. So you just got to do it when you have time to do it. We all have to put food on the table and
right.
keep going.
when your editor's working for beer instead of for money, they tend to be slightly less enthusiastic until you show up with the next six pack. So,
right. Just keep just buy a case. You'll be good. Buy a keg. I don't know. Just for them.
Well, you gotta bring it a little bit at a time.
So yeah. You don't want all at once. So they don't want editing.
Yeah. That'd be horrible.
Was there ever a time where the actors were alone with the head and having to talk to the head? Like, basically, like, looks like they're talking to themselves.
Oh, we have some wonderful outtakes. So it's at the TTC, and this shot should be in the movie. It's at the TTC, and our main actor, Daniel, is down on his knees. He's got the flap open of the bag, which is just, you know, a blank screen that's going to eventually be replaced. And this tourist group walks by, and one girl out of the tourist group notices that somebody is talking to a bag dealing in the TTC in the middle of the concrete. And she tries to get the rest of her friends to stop and look at this one crazy guy who's talking to his bag, but the rest of them just keep pulling her towards the ferry boat.
Wow. So you mean to tell me only one person noticed that someone was bent over talking to a bag in Walt Disney World? Wow.
Yes. Yes, that is the case. And it wasn't a security guard, so.
That's amazing. Well, you know, I guess it's we're just going to have to follow along as you post things about it. It's going to be a little while before see it. But how can people follow along at home?
If they're on Facebook, facebook.com/waltzfrozenhead. Our website is waltzfrozenhead.com. Disney is going to rue the day they did not get that URL snatched up.
You already have it, right?
Yes, yeah. So we already have it. It's already up and running. And the Twitter account is twitter.com/waltzfrozen with no O head. But if you just search Waltz Frozen Head on Twitter, you'll definitely run into it. And that's definitely the most active one. If you want to follow up with the witty company commentary, that's the one to follow.
So as the film progresses and it comes closer to release, is the Twitter account still going to be in the voice of Frozen Walt?
that's the plan. That is really the plan. Now, we've had to, a few times through this process, I've been tweeting as, Ben the intern.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
But the plan is that Walt's Frozen Head Twitter account remains that forever, and or at least, as long as I can keep making Disney jokes.
Well, I'm sure they'll keep supplying you with material, so you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Not to be a pessimist. But anyways, obviously I love Disney. I have a Disney podcast. I'm not a hater. But
right.
Anyways, thank you so much for coming on and giving us a little glimpse into your film.
All right. No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Like to contact us here at the Creepy Kingdom podcast show, you can do it so many ways, but probably the best way is creepykingdom@gmail.com. And if you would like to check out any of our other podcasts, Curvy Cutie Chat, the Eva James is a podcast, and Roxy's World, you can do so by going to monstermoviemedia.com. And for show notes, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics, videos, links to all of our social media, Pinterest, Tumblr, Google+, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, just go to creepykingdom.com. Until next time, my friends.
Keep it creepy. I have to go now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams.